by aligning himself with NIH's pharma overlords and carrying industry water. The same weapons that NIH used to silence Dr. Morris, enforced isolation, disgrace, prohibiting him from publishing papers, presenting at conferences or talking to the press, changing his laboratory locks to prevent further research, were already pieces of an established Soviet-style template for silencing dissident scientists at NIH. The agency first unsheathed those weapons in the 1950s to destroy the career of its award-winning virologist, Dr. Bernice Eddy, the discoverer of the poliomyelitis virus, who later found a cancer-causing monkey virus in the Salk and Sabin polio vaccines. When her research disclosed problems with vaccine safety, NIH officials banned Dr. Eddy from her lab, changed her office locks, and ordered her to refrain from interviews and speeches. After silencing Eddy, NIH gave the contaminated vaccine to 99 million baby boomers who suffered a tenfold increase in soft tissue cancers, resulting in a public health disaster that dwarfs the harms of polio. Dr. Fauci and government health regulators later used these same techniques to muzzle a parade of in-house scientists, including Dr. Judy Mikovits, NIH contract researcher Dr. Bart Klassen, and CDC's varicella chickenpox vaccine researcher Dr. Gary Goldman, who dared to tell hard truths about vaccine safety and efficacy. The 1976 swine flu event was the first time that the federal government agreed to serve as pharma's insurer. The episode taught the public an important lesson. Tort immunity incentivizes dangerous and ineffective vaccines. Industry and the magisterial class learned an entirely different morale from the tragic episode. In 1986, they made swine flu vaccine template the model for the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which shielded all mandated vaccines from liability. At the dawn of Dr. Fauci's career, he learned that both pandemics and fake pandemics provide an opportunity to expand the bureaucracy's power and to multiply the wealth of its pharma partners. 2005, Bird Flu. In 2005, Dr. Fauci revived NIAID's script from the 1976 debacle. This time, the villain was an avian flu, H5N1. Like an agitated Chicken Little, Dr. Fauci had been warning the world about the imminent bird flu pandemic since 2001. That year, in a paper, Infectious Diseases, Considerations for the 21st Century, Dr. Fauci balefully forecast a bird-to-human transmission of an influenza scourge that would decimate global populations, beginning with Hong Kong. He predicted unprecedented carnage from this new strain of influenza A virus entering a population that is relatively naive for the microbe in question. In 2004, a Vietnam-based Oxford University Clinical Research Unit director, Jeremy Ferrer, who would later rise to both knighthood and to command of the powerful Wellcome Trust, and his Vietnamese colleague Tran Tin Hien, identified the reemergence of the deadly bird flu, or H5N1, in humans. It was a little girl. She caught it from a pet duck that had died, and she dug up and reburied, Ferrer told the Financial Times. The Wellcome Trust heavily funded Oxford's Vietnam project. Drug developer Sir Henry Wellcome established Wellcome Trust with a donation of his stock in Burroughs Wellcome, the British pharmaceutical behemoth. In 1995, the trust sold its stock to Burroughs Wellcome's chief competitor, GlaxoSmithKline, to facilitate the merger of England's two pharmaceutical giants. Wellcome Trust's $30 billion endowment makes it the world's fourth largest foundation and the globe's most prodigious financier of biomedical research. Like the Gates Foundation, Wellcome targets its donations to promote the interests of the pharmaceutical industry. In 2007, British medical journalist John Stone raised the issue of phony pandemics in a letter to BMJ Online as part of the swine flu postmortem. "There always remains the issues," he said, "of whether scares are being promoted because of sober assessment of risk or because they constitute another bonanza for the pharmaceutical industry. We need better institutional means to spot the difference, but so far pandemic flu has been disappointing for the horror merchants. Does anyone recall the moral of the story of the little boy who cried wolf? Well, it is what the industry does all the time." In 2020, Ferrer would partner with Bill Gates to fund modeler Neil Ferguson, the epidemiologist who produced the wildly exaggerated COVID-19 death forecasts that helped ratchet up the COVID-19 fear campaign and rationalize draconian lockdowns. As Schwab mentions, Ferrer was at the heart of the earlier fiasco involving avian flu, generated around the delusory fear that the virus would cross the species barrier. Ferguson is the modeling impresario at drumming up phony pandemics. His curriculum vitae includes, in 2005, Ferguson predicted that up to 150 million people could be killed from bird flu. In the end, only 282 people died worldwide from the disease between 2003 and 2009. In 2001, a published Imperial College projection by Ferguson sparked the mass culling of 11 million sheep and cattle during the 2001 outbreak of foot and mouth disease. In 2002, he projected human deaths of 136,000 in the UK from mad cow disease. The UK government slaughtered millions of cows. The actual number of deaths was 177. In 2009, Ferguson projected that the swine flu would kill 65,000 Brits. Swine flu killed 457 people in the UK. In 2020, Ferguson famously predicted up to 2.2 million COVID-19 deaths in the United States in 2020 alone. Dr. Fauci, in many Western countries, used Ferguson's projection to justify lockdowns and other draconian mandates. Ferrer played a key role in Dr. Fauci's campaign to cover up evidence of government involvement in the potential lab generation of COVID-19. In 2005, Dr. Fauci crowed that his long-awaited bird flu had finally arrived. Using data from Ferguson, he warned it would kill millions of people worldwide unless he and his pharma partners could deploy a vaccine to derail the approaching Holocaust. Political and medical establishment cheerleaders mobilized for the now familiar drill, boosting pandemic panic. Parroting Dr. Fauci's bird anxieties, government ministries of countries like the United States, Canada, and France, and the World Health Organization bewailed that H5N1 was highly contagious and deadly. The World Health Organization and the World Bank screeched that the plague could cost the world $2 trillion. Anthony Fauci prophesied that H5N1 is a time bomb waiting to go off. Klaus Stohr, then coordinator of the influenza program at the World Health Organization, amplified Dr. Fauci's augury, predicting that between 2 to 7 million people would die, and that billions would fall ill worldwide. In September 2005, Der Spiegel quoted the United Nations chief coordinator David Nabarro that the new flu pandemic can kill up to 150 million people. The New Yorker offered overwrought bodements of millions of deaths from one of the greatest dangers facing the United States. Pandemic expert Robert Webster invoked military vernacular that had become de rigueur for loosening public purse strings in the post-9/11 biosecurity era. We have to prepare as if we were going to war, and the public needs to understand that clearly. This virus is playing its role as a natural bioterrorist. In response to Dr. Fauci's lathered forecasts, the White House unveiled a Christmas list for the Bush family's favorite medicine man, including $7.1 billion to protect Americans from his avian plague. President George W. Bush warned that no country can afford to ignore the threat of avian flu. Dr. Fauci trotted out his reliable old chestnut that the new version of bird flu could be as lethal as the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic that killed 50 to 100 million people. Dr. Fauci had reason to know that this weary boogeyman was a canard. In 2008, he co-authored a study for the Journal of Infectious Disease confessing that virtually all of the influenza casualties in 1918 did not actually die from the flu, but from bacterial pneumonia and bronchial meningitis, which are today easily treated with antibiotics unavailable in 1918. The Spanish flu that government virologists have invoked to terrorize generations of Americans with vaccine compliance is, after all, a paper tiger. Bush told the U.S. Congress the country needed $1.2 billion for sufficient avian virus vaccine to inoculate 20 million Americans. Additionally, he added $3 billion for Dr. Fauci's new seasonal flu vaccines and $1 billion for the storage of antiviral medications. Bush also demanded that Congress pass the Biodefense and Pandemic Vaccine and Drug Development Act of 2005, granting liability relief to vaccine manufacturers. The pharmaceutical firms told the White House that they would refuse to manufacture vaccines without an impervious shield from tort liability. The act banned lawsuits against even the most negligent, reckless, and reprehensible behavior by vaccine makers, even for vaccinations administered by force. The immunity provision was a blank check to Big Pharma's greed and criminal profiteering. The National Vaccine Information Center called the scheme a drug company stockholder's dream and a consumer's worst nightmare. Dr. Fauci arranged for rich vaccine contracts to Sanofi and Chiron to shore up the fragile vaccine enterprise. Once again, Dr. Fauci's pandemic was a no-show. By the time it was all over, the WHO estimated that by May 16, 2006, Dr. Fauci's bird flu had killed only 100 people worldwide. As the investigative journalist and attorney Michael Fumento observed in his postmortem on Dr. Fauci's bird flu hoax, Dr. Fauci's recurring disease nightmares often don't materialize. Fumento recounted in Forbes magazine, around the world, nations heeded the warnings and spent vast sums developing vaccines and making other preparations. 2009 Hong Kong Swine Flu. In 2009, Dr. Fauci once again hyped a fraudulent epidemic. This time, it was the Hong Kong Swine Flu. That year, in a classic bait and switch, which Dr. Fauci and the Wellcome Trust helped to mastermind, the WHO, by then under control of pharma and its emergent funder Bill Gates, declared a swine flu pandemic. 3 years earlier, Gates had appointed GlaxoSmithKline's director, Tachi Yamada, to run his foundation's global health program. Yamada also sat on the board of Neil Ferguson's outfit, the Imperial College London, which ran the fraudulent modeling that grievously inflated projected death counts from the 2009 swine flu outbreak and more recently for COVID-19. Gates is one of the largest funders for the Imperial College London's modeling center. Neil Ferguson, the epidemiologist who produced the fraudulent projections, also sat on the Wellcome Trust staff with Jeremy Ferrer. There was no sign of a pandemic. In May of that year, WHO had detected some excess cases of seasonal flu, but the symptoms were mild and death rates were very low, fewer than 145 people worldwide over 11 weeks since its first appearance. Nevertheless, the agency decided in secret meetings to declare a global pandemic. WHO's declaration activated $18 billion worth of sleeper contracts that WHO and Gates's other organizations had pressured various African and European countries to sign with GlaxoSmithKline and other pharmaceutical companies. These secretive agreements obliged signatory nations, including Germany, Great Britain, Italy, and France, to purchase $18 billion of various experimental, untested, fast-tracked, zero-liability H1N1 flu vaccines, most notably Glaxo's product, Pandemrix, in the event that the WHO declared a Class 6 pandemic. Then, just in time to trigger the sleeper contracts, WHO, in a sleazy switcheroo, changed the definition of Class 6 pandemic, deleting the words and the requirement for mass deaths around the globe. "You could now have a pandemic with zero deaths," explained Michael Fumento in Forbes magazine. Under hot pressure from apoplectic critics of the boondoggle, WHO denied and then sheepishly admitted that it had downgraded its definition in consultation with government and industry scientists. The names of those individuals, WHO explained, needed to remain top secret for reasons that WHO didn't explain. To date, WHO has refused to disclose the identities of its trusted confidants. There was widespread suspicion that most of those officials were PIs on the payroll of Glaxo and other vaccine makers. According to the British Medical Journal, the World Health Organization's handling of the swine flu pandemic was deeply marred by secrecy and conflict of interest with drug companies. The BMJ found that the experts who wrote WHO's guidelines on the use of antiviral drugs had received consulting fees from the top two manufacturers of these drugs, Roche and GlaxoSmithKline, GSK. Among the driving forces behind the pandemic declaration was Sir Roy Anderson, a board member of GlaxoSmithKline and the rector of Imperial College London, which would play such a prominent role in concocting both the 2009 swine flu and the 2020 COVID-19 crises. WHO's pandemic declaration forced five European and several African countries to purchase millions of doses of Glaxo's dangerous pandemic vaccine, earning Glaxo a cool and fast $13 billion. Sanofi reported a profit of 1.95 billion euros on its swine flu vaccine revenue. According to a report on the episode by the London-based Bureau of Investigative Journalism, the WHO violated its own rules by not publicly disclosing the conflicts among its key advisors when it drew up the guidelines. Contemporary news accounts identify Dr. Fauci as the chief proponent of the multi-billion-dollar fast-track H1N1 flu vaccine given that year to millions of Americans. Dr. Fauci is more responsible than any other single person for the fast-track development of this new flu vaccine, according to a contemporary report by National Public Radio's Richard Knox. As usual, the fawning U.S. media obediently spread fear and lies to promote Dr. Fauci's H1N1 jabs. NBC grimly forecasted that swine flu could strike up to 40% of Americans over the next 2 years, and as many as several hundred thousand could die if a vaccine campaign and other measures aren't successful. Historian Dr. Russell Blaylock writes, "The Ministry of Fear, the CDC, was working overtime, peddling doom and gloom, knowing that frightened people do not make rational decisions. Nothing sells vaccines like panic. At a January 2019 conference hosted by the Gates Foundation-funded Center on Global Health Security at London's Chatham House, Mark Van Ranst, a Belgian virologist and pharmaceutical industry insider, financially and ideologically indentured to GSK, Sanofi Pasteur, J&J, and Abbott, described his role during the swine flu hoax a decade earlier. Chatham House is an exclusive think tank for globalist and corporatist elites. Its deliberations are so closely guarded that its name is synonymous with secrecy. In 2009, Van Ranst served as Belgium's flu commissioner.